Good evening, beloved friends. Let us begin our time in the name of the Father, God transcendent, and the Son, God omnipresent, and the Holy Spirit, God immanent, the most holy living Trinity, is now and always with us forever. Amen. So once again, your presences are a great blessing for all of us. What we do during our time together and who we are, what we transmit, what we receive, is not only for ourselves, but for all worlds. And thus, we place ourselves under the canopy of the work and the great and sacred lineage that we are a part of, and give ourselves fully to it. As always, it is a privilege to be here with you this evening. We have now moved out of the season of Easter and into the season of what is known as ordinary time. And we will remain in this time until Advent. Ordinary time, as Thomas Keating has said, is not ordinary at all. It's quite extraordinary, really, because this is the period of year when we are called to put into embodiment everything that Christ represented, lived through, taught, and was during his journey in life, in his incarnation, passion, death, resurrection and ascension experience, and through Pentecost, which we just went through last Sunday. Again, just repeating what we did last week in work terms from Burl Pogson, who stated that the disciples at Pentecost were given to know their aim, and they were given the power to connect with a force to carry out their task. May it be so for us. This evening's opening reflection comes from Jean de Salzman. She was considered Mr. Gurdjieff's deepest and closest pupil. She was a musician, and the anniversary of her death was May 24th, 1990. Not so terribly long ago. She stated, "My deep wish is to submit entirely to an inner voice, the feeling of the divine, of the sacred that is in me. I know that a higher energy, what religions call God or Lord, is within me. It will appear if the mind and the body are truly related. God is here when two forces are opposed and a third unites them. We can ask for help in order to unite these forces within us. We can say, Lord, have mercy, in order to be." Thank you, Madame de Salzman. May your influence and your being be with us tonight. Amen. So a couple of notes and a couple of announcements before we begin. And the first one is really an invitation. Blessedly for those who live in the Austin area and those who are able to visit, and I hope someday everyone will be able to. The church is opening more and more, and its services and programs are reopening to in-person options. So we are again called and invited to serve the roles that make the church campus actually reverberate with a conscious, loving presence that people feel by the presence of our being when they actually enter the grounds. And this loving presence is a function of what we call seva, which is selfless service. So you may participate in Seva in a variety of ways. One is the Sunday worship preparation and serving of the coffee now, and later we think more than that. It is also to participate actively in the youth services, the youth education program, which we are looking forward to resuming in the not too distant future. Currently, the teen program has already been re-implemented on in person. There's the floral committee, and there is AV and media support, which actually could be done even if you live outside of the Austin area. So I invite you to consider these options and how much they would mean. And you actually see and relate to one another in an entirely different way when you're in the mode of doing service in a conscious manner. So if you're moved to any one of these services, please contact Jill Frank or Lisa Janung in the church office. Also, a further note, just in case you've ever wondered about how we close our evening, we, or at least I, open my screen to a gallery view so I can see everyone present, or many of you present. And we actually have 2+ minutes of music. And that time is to allow us really to gaze upon one another, to affirm what we have so preciously received, and to offer one another and back to all worlds the atmospheric web of influence that we have received and transmitted to the entire array of creation. So it's an expression of gratitude, just a moment before we go back into our ordinary lives to consciously realize and acknowledge what we have received and to transmit that influence, not only to one another, but to all worlds. So that's just a little note in case you were ever wondering about that. So now let us prepare ourselves again to enter that place of stillness of being, a place of imminent trust and receptivity to all of the higher influences that are not only being transmitted to us as food, but we are also expected to receive them and transmit our own conscious self-remembering of what we have received and who we are up the ray of creation and perhaps down the ray of creation so that others are fed as we are fed. So we breathe in deeply. All every most hidden part of our being, all being, everything, everything that is hurt and everything that seems dark, everything harsh and shameful and maimed and ugly, prideful and vain, irreparably damaged, so it seems, diseased, unforgiving, unforgivable, wounded, resistant, everything. And we hold it as an offering. We lift it, transubstantiate it in our being as whole, as lovely, as known in light. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into the worlds, all worlds. We consciously hand over the complexities of our day. We hand over the plans for tomorrow. We hand over the anxieties and small fears of our hearts. We lay down everything that we know is our life and yield to the divine human life. And we stand unencumbered before God and one another. And so it is. And we move into Lectio Divina. Our passage will be read three times with a silent pause between each one. Give no heed and attend not to those who do wrong. I'm sorry, let me share the screen for you. Give no heed and attend not to those who do wrong. Trust in the Most High and seek goodness. Live harmoniously upon the earth in peace and with assurance. Find your delight in the Lord, who will give you your heart's desire. Commit to the way. Trust. Make your righteousness shine like the dawn. Be still. Pray for those who prosper by wrongdoing. Refrain from anger. Abandon hate. Do not be so provoked. It brings only harm. Wait a little, and the darkness will pass. Look for them, and they will not be there. The meek will inherit the earth, will delight in their work. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. For those who lived in a land of shadows, light, sunbursts of light, glimpses of the way to inner happiness. Give no heed and attend not to those who do wrong. Trust in the Most High and seek goodness. Live harmoniously upon the earth in peace and with assurance. Find your delight in the Lord, who will give you your heart's desire. Commit to the way. Trust. Make your righteousness shine like the dawn. Be still. Pray for those who prosper by wrongdoing. Refrain from anger. abandon hate. Do not be so provoked, it brings only harm. Wait a little, and the darkness will pass. Look for them, and they will not be there. The meek will inherit the earth, will delight in their work. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. For those who lived in a land of deep shadows, light, sunbursts of light, glimpses of the way to inner happiness. Give no heed and attend not to those who do wrong. Trust in the Most High and seek goodness. Live harmoniously upon the earth in peace and with assurance. Find your delight in the Lord, who will give you your heart's desire. Commit to the way, trust, and make your righteousness shine like the dawn. Be still. Pray for those who prosper by wrongdoing. Refrain from anger. Abandon hate. Do not be so provoked, it brings only harm. Wait a little, and the darkness will pass. Look for them, and they will not be there. The meek will inherit the earth, will delight in their work. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. For those who lived in a land of deep shadows, light, sunbursts of light, glimpses of the way to inner happiness. Amen. We have a few moments for sharing. Would anyone like to share what they received from listening or reading to this passage or the image? Leanne, is your hand up? It's good. Yes.
Hi, Marianne.
Hello, Leanne. It's good to see you.
So good to see you. So yesterday, I lived in two worlds. I had so much anger. It was a cloud that just followed me. And yet, while I was doing that, I also had to pause while I'd run to a Zoom centering prayer group. And then... So I awoke this morning, and with that anger still seething in my body. I could feel it in my body. It was something I was carrying. And yet this passage was the first thing that I read this morning, early this morning. And I had to laugh and cry at the same time. And the joy was in all the truth that was there. And I really heard, wait a little. And certainly that things have changed quite a bit today, although there are the remembrances of that anger from yesterday that is really wonderful as a reminder of what else can be as well, moving past the anger by waiting a little and trusting in God.
Thank you, Leanne. Isn't it wonderful how things come to meet us just as we need it, just as we need it. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Catherine Nichols, please.
Well, what spoke to me was the two references to darkness, and the darkness will pass, and that we have to walk in the darkness, and we have to wait a little. So we have to do our self-observation at the time that we're in that dark place, and something has us identified. And so we do our work, and we wait a little and not too long. So many times we hear the advice that we don't wallow in something that we feel those feelings. So I heard the a little and the wait part as well.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Catherine. Thank you. Gay, please.
I was so struck by this image today when I received it in the email, and it took me the longest time to figure out what I was looking at.
Yes.
Finally, it came together. And when I saw that image of that being, that person who seems to have come to the end of their being in some way or another, yes. I felt like I had been there and done that. As one who has a long, long history of stuffing anger and refusing to feel it, and probably it has come out in many, many ways, but seldom ever in words. But I can imagine that being right there as being me, and that big red ball, whatever it is, that is something that is being released. And it seems to have a great deal of power, mm-hmm. that ball. I'm left wondering about anger and the appropriate use of that power. And I wish to explore it more and understand it.
May it be so, Gay. Yes, may it be so. Thank you. Jan Brown, please.
Unmute. Okay, I think I'm unmuted.
Yes.
So what struck me is that last stanza or paragraph. 6 months ago, I lost my sister. And it was a very painful death. My sister was like my other half all my life. And I have walked in the darkness, and I have lived in the land of deep shadows for these past 6 months. And so when I see, when I hear, have seen great light, and bursts of light, you know, it lightens my heart. You know, I can go now, maybe a day without crying, maybe. But that whole thing, you know, all of us have walked in darkness and lived in deep shadows, and to have some hope at the end of it, because it always has lightened up. That burden has always lightened up at some, you know, after the darkness.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Jan. Hattie, please.
Good afternoon. I was so moved by this beautiful passage. There's such a thread of there's a thread of hope that I that's woven through this that I heard over and over again, but particularly the line, just like the lady who went before, particularly the line, wait a little and the darkness will pass. It reminded me of the old reliable cycle of the day, from dawn to day to dusk to dark. And this cycle is so consistent, so regular, so reliable. And and our moods can be transformed as this cycle moves from dark to day, to dawn to day. If we just pause and wait a little, and the cycle and the regularity and the promise of God's commitment to be consistently and regular with this cycle, we can be transformed and move with it. Mm. And it's such a wonderful, hopeful reminder to wait a little.
Wait. Thank you so much for that, Hattie. So beautiful. Thank you. Well, thank you to everyone for your rich sharing and for your presence during that sharing. So let us just take it all into our hearts and we'll let it do its silent work for us. So now it is my pleasure to once again introduce Donald Janung, who will continue to accompany us through this time of our sharings and discoveries about our passions and into the light of it all. Donald, welcome.
Thank you, and good evening, friends. So we left off last week with our investigation of pride in vanity. And so we'll have a moment here to begin to share what insights that we experienced during the week. And along the way, I kind of wonder if it was easy for us to, with our work partner in our journey groups and in other conversations, talk about vanity and pride. Was it easier for us to broach those experiences in ourselves than it was for lust and greed? And are we asking the same questions tonight as we get further into anger and resentment? But to start us off as a reminder with what it is that we were working with for our exercise for the week, here's our homework. And read this here so that we can all get it together for those that have smaller screens. Where do you most feel that you are utterly different from other people? Special. Notice comparisons, better than, less than, the dualities listed above. And reminder that less than is only a form of reverse pride. And then take a concrete, specific self-observation around pride or vanity. What are your thoughts, the sensations, that is, the experience of the body that you feel? And then what are the feelings themselves? And then another was, what do you boast about? What are you silent about? Where does pride prevent you from speaking? Does fear of being humiliated or vulnerable or looking foolish prevent you from sharing? Sharing and courage may be in service toward a rise of consciousness. And then next, this beautiful prayer. Lord, my Lord and my God, take from me everything that distances me from you. My Lord and my God, give me everything that brings me closer to you. My Lord and my God, detach from me myself, to give my all to you. I have not seen that prayer before last week's email, and it certainly is an all-encompassing and powerful prayer. So with this and other experiences you may have during the week, what did we see? What were we experiencing with pride and vanity? And I hope along the way that we were taking it lightly and remembering that these are just eyes in us. And because of that, we realize that these eyes are illusions. They're just energy forms that are passing through that we have a relationship with, and they have a place to land in us. They've got a place to express in us. And so our work is to see them coming in, observe them coming in, that is, and process them along the way with the hope that in the future they don't have a landing pad, that they move right on past. So what do we have this week? I'm certain that our journey groups had some enjoyable moments talking about pride and vanity. Ha, and I thought that it would be an easy one to talk about. Pam Rossman, good to see your hand up there, friend.
Hi, good to see you. Well, I have many examples, but one that is, we had the comment about blushing. Yeah. Okay. So I'm new to facilitating a journey group. And, you know, anytime we do these things, there's, you know, a lot of personality and a lot of good work. But this time when I got off of the journey group and I closed it down, I put my hands to my face and it was so hot. So hot. I don't recall consciously having an embarrassment. I have in the past, but this session I didn't. But still, the body's registering this, you know, something going on, and the body knows, you know, what it's all about. So I thought about that, and I thought, okay, well, vanity is blushing. How must I have seemed, you know, how must I have looked, or, you know, my hair or whatever, you know. But pride keeps me coming back over and over and over again to this commitment that I have made. The will to work and to rub up against that friction. I had a question that we were asking the question, what good is pride? How is that different? And it is this core value system that I could feel working within me that's measuring against sometimes an aggrandized view of myself, comparing me to this movie star image that I have of myself. I mean, a lot of times it was like that. But there is an energy in pride that helps me to move towards my transformation. It may not be able to go, you know what I'm saying? It can't go, it's going to be left behind or neutralized. However, it's a useful eyes that can be co-opted, Deputy Stewart probably, and Sly Man certainly, as was pointed out in my group, is really there. So I'll stop with that example because I'm getting chatty and I can feel that. Is it vanity that's talkative, I believe. So we'll just stop there.
Pam, that was a really very good sharing because you really did hit the essence of it in very few words. Pride can be used for our awakening, for our transformation. And, you know, just as coaches call upon their athletes to have, you know, to have some pride, that pride is to reach the aim, reach the goal. And in the work and use, it's the same way. There's a lot of eyes that I've learned that if I can take those eyes that otherwise are seen as negative, and I can use that part, the good part, the God part of them, towards my spiritual transformation, towards my real aim, they have really served the purpose. And I like what you said, that they may not go with us. No, they're not going to go with us, but they're beautiful. They're beautiful energy along the way. So you really described it quite well. Thank you. Last week after class, I found myself particularly chatty. And I was observing, what is this chattiness from? And it was a residual energy. There was remnants of pride and vanity and evaluation, whether the talking points were made right, whether the message was coherent, etc. And I'm like, oh, very good, nice. And then at some point I just said, why don't you just shut up, man? This is just leaking force. And goodness, what must it be like listening to somebody who's just listened to class and now you're recovering everything for them? And so it was a good moment. And but it also reflected on me an experience I had recently with pride and vanity with someone rather close to me who shall be nameless, who said to me, you know, there's nothing smart about you. You're clever, that's what you are. I thought, huh, wow, how is that? You know, it's like someone rubbing their hands through your hair and then slapping you in the face. And we got such a laugh out of that. There's nothing smart about you. And pride and vanity played with that on both sides. You know, pride on them, there's nothing smart about you, which happens to go back and touch some issues in my time body. And then there's, you know, being clever. You're clever. It's like, well, I can take some pride and maybe have a little bit of vanity in that. But it's interesting how these last week, I think it was Lisa, how we started putting together these different concepts, these different eyes and different work ideas, and how they married together. And they helped to bridge us and move us along so much quicker. And of course, the idea of taking delight in all this, because we realize that pride and vanity, they're just eyes. They're just eyes. And so they've got an energy in there that I want for my spiritual transformation. So let's have some fun in extracting, neutralizing them, extracting the energy and neutralizing those eyes along the way. So we have a laughing moment every now and then when I kind of look at it and say, clever. We're smart, you know, so it's kind of an ongoing joke for us now. Gloria.
Hi, Donald.
Hello, Gloria. It's good to see you.
Well, this is a hard one for me because my pride is wounded and I haven't wanted to talk about it. It's something that I feel like all of my prayers and my affirmations and my lotions and my potions and my exercise and all of the gamut of what I've tried to do didn't prevent me from developing my fourth cancer in 42 years. And since I hadn't had one in 12, it felt like, man, I've learned all I needed to learn from that. It's history. And then when I apply all my work affirmations, I can't tell you how different it is to encounter this, be in this space versus cancers 1, 2, and 3, the wonderful tools that have helped me process all this. I saw, what hubris, what vanity to think that you could control cancer. What kind of pride and vanity is that? Who are we kidding? And it was such a revelation to do these turnarounds on it and go, you don't know. You don't know. Why worry? You don't know. You don't know. And then I came to, thank God I've lived long enough to develop another one. And if I beat it 3 times, I can do it 4 times. And you know, this is a very common one, and they found it so early only because I was being vigilantly screened for the others. How about the poor people that don't go get looked at from head to toe all the time? Mm. You know, and it just led me to a whole different level, and I'm finally able to talk about it. It's been an interesting experience, and I realized none of that is the real I. You know, although this all jumped into made my little eyes go crazy and, you know, if you'd only done this and if you hadn't done that and, you know, if you hadn't done this and all that. And the reality of it is, it's all influenced by old cobalt radiation I had 42 years ago that caused all this. And it has nothing to do with me. It was the best decision at the time.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful for all of the, you know, don't argue with reality and so many things that I picked up in these classes to get me through some really dark times. And I want to say thank you to all the teachers and to all the classes and everything going on, because it's just changes lives.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting and I haven't wanted to talk about it. And I shared it with my journey group first, even before a lot of people in my family. And it was such a relief to just let it go and go like, you don't know. And just say, hey, we're getting old. And everybody I know has some sort of infirmity now. When I was young, it was different. You weren't so special now that you're almost 70. So what's another cancer? What's a little lymphoma? You know, anyway, so I just don't mean to make light of it at all, because it's a horrible, serious thing. But at the same time, I feel so blessed of knowing that's not the real I, that's not the real me, it's not the real essence. It's just that shell out there, that Gloria that's had a lot of fun and enjoyed her life and really had a lot of nice breaks health-wise. So thanks for letting me share.
Yeah, Gloria, thank you for, again, anchoring that outside of yourself. You know, one of the things that happens with these classes and our opportunities for sharing is that these words are the right and perfect words that come through our mouths to meet and communicate what it is Spirit would like people to hear. And so we just never know who we're blessing and how we're blessing them by anchoring these outside of ourselves, in addition to the blessings for ourselves. I can see the delight. And what the heck, what is radiation cobalt anyway? It's light. Yeah, so way to go with the light. And the work idea is so helpful with not, you know, giving us the freedom, as you said, to not argue with reality. And that is, things are happening the only way they can. So who am I along the way, and how quickly can I get to self-remembering? And I appreciate you sharing all that. Thank you. Blessings on your journey with this.
Yes, it's very wonderful that only four rounds of chemo, no surgery, no radiation. So I call that cancer-like compared to the last one. I had 5 days in a row every 3 weeks in a hospital.
Yes. So. Yeah. And, you know, coming off of what was shared just before you with Pam, you know, this is a good use of pride. And we've been through this before. We've got some pride in it that we have overcome. We've neutralized this. And we're going to neutralize it again. And so congratulations on that. Good use of pride.
Thank you.
Thank you. Brother Stephen.
Yeah, this was an interesting exercise for me, because I'm a one, so I tend to be highly self-critical. I tend to be very critical. So I assess everything. And so it would loathe to brag about anything, but I find myself sometimes bragging to my wife about something I felt I did well, but I would never want it to get out. So there is a, and pride for me is almost a counterbalance to all the self-criticism. It's like intentional solacing, knowing that the way I'm constructed, I need to soften the self-criticism. And so, yes, you could do non-critical self-observation, but that doesn't always work out. And so, and the other thing about vanity, it's we all do it on some level. You know, when we get dressed in the morning and comb our hair, and what's my uniform? You know, these days, if it wasn't for Untuckit and Columbia, I wouldn't know what to wear. And so I have this consistent look that I present to the world, and there's vanity in that. It's my projection. And the pride is a quieter thing, because I'm a perfectionist. And so if I do something well, I want to kind of savor it.
Yeah.
Did I get muted? I got muted.
We lost you at savor it.
Well, yeah, I like to savor something I did well. But, and so I move between these things, and it's becoming more self-aware of, there isn't like, I know that illustration had the two giants ahead of you, but it's less separate than that. It's more integrated in very subtle ways, very touch and pinch of vanity, a pinch of pride, and a pinch of false humility, and then a pinch of humility. So
yeah,
in my experience.
Yeah, Steve, that's really good. I appreciate all of that. And, you know, as you were talking about having a one personality type, yeah, I remembered a prayer that I had early on when I was learning the Enneagram, that may all my physicians have a one personality type. And it's the place where we bless, it's your service to humanity. And so, you know, that there's a little pride in it, that, you know, that's a good thing because it serves people in such a kind way. And, but along with that, there may be some pride in there, but there's also courage and neutrality, and there's willingness, and there's acceptance and reason and love, and you're moving right up the scale of consciousness. So it's all there, and it's all serving humanity and serving your spiritual transformation. So I celebrate that with you, brother. That's a very good thing. In the vanity part, my goodness, would you ever have been a physician? Would you ever track in that direction if it wasn't for all the stimulation that we received as children, you know, as little infants? I'm, you know, a granddad now. And so I can watch my behavior with the little ones and like, oh my gosh, I'm seeding in them vanity. And it's like, you know what? We'll deal with that later. This is good for their development in this particular way. They're feeling loved and they're learning. So, it's all good, isn't it? Yeah. Thank you for sharing, Steve. I appreciate it. Brother Joe. Hello, Dad.
Hello, brother. Right now I'm feeling lucky because I hear you all sharing. Can you hear me?
Yes. There's a little bit of background feed. I'm not sure if your volume may be a little bit too high, but go ahead and talk, Joe. We'll work through it.
Oh, I feel lucky and immature at the same time because I used to feel really nervous when I used to share. But I realized we're all sharing information and it stops the entertainer eye in me or the competitor eye that tries to say something better than the last person. So just wanted to share my progress. I just feel lucky. I'm like finally feeling less nervous. So
yeah. Good job. Yeah. Isn't it so good though how the work comes to us little by little? It's very compassionate in that way. If it stripped us down of these eyes and showed us too much at any one moment, it would be overload. It just wouldn't be kind. And the work is so compassionate that it gives us what we need. And there's a work idea also that God doesn't give us any more than what we can handle. So that you continue to work and on both sides, work on the side of knowledge, work on the side of being, which you're doing so often. And you're getting exactly what you need and you're growing at a beautiful rate. So thank you, Joe, for participating in that way.
Thank you too, brother.
Yeah, thank you. David.
Hello, Donald. Hello, everyone. It's great to be with you all tonight. I didn't get to be here last week, and you know, the first thing I'll say is these classes on these emotional states, these energy centers. I feel like we could work on each one of these topics for, you know, a month or two. I can feel just so much being revealed and sort of unpacking when I'm studying, you know, last week's emotions and also this week's. I think the big revelation for me was in working with pride and vanity was to see how really I think in me it's vanity and pride. And for the longest time, ever since I've really been in the school and especially introduced to the Enneagram. And looking back at my life and the features in my time body, I thought that, you know, pride is the thing, you know, that's this almost like this central axle, right? Perhaps chief feature. And the exploration this past week showed me that, whoa, I was really missing the vanity. There's so much more, I think, to be revealed for me around these two features. But there are so many examples as I look back on my life, and even things that, you know, that I thought were governed by pride, I can see, you know, that there was so much vanity involved also. You know, being a helper type, for instance, you know, really working on seeing the pride in that personality characteristic, but and you know, and noticing the eyes that maybe want to brag or boast, but noticing how much there's this, it's almost like a silent kind of vanity. It's like there are vanity eyes that are sort of stroking my pride when I do something that I feel is, you know, good in some way, or that I'm being the kind of person I'm supposed to be. But I think one of the questions in the homework is about, you know, notice, you know, doing more of this three-centered kind of observation. And when I think about some of the things that are clearly, you know, vanity, that it's like the inner taste of that vanity is really sweet. And it's funny that I really have a bad sweet tooth with food. I wonder if there's a connection. I don't know. But I love this homework, and I'm going to keep working on it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, David. It is exhilarating, gives us a work energy. That if we've got an inner taste for it, an appreciation for it, when we come across these particular eyes or emotions, and we're asked to put the spotlight on those, and they may not be ones that we're very familiar with. It's kind of the experience, the enjoyment of being an adult learner. It's like, well, I've really never gone there before too much. So I can get with the spirit of that. And you know, one of the things we talked about last week is the usefulness of when we see an afflictive eye, that recognizing, for me, the experience that there's just a little bit of usefulness and truth in that, that's useful in my spiritual journey, and the rest of it I release and not hold on to it and move on to non-identification, self-remembering as quickly as possible. And that helps continue the momentum, the joy of it, if you will. Best wishes in your explorations in this particular area, David. Thank you. We'll finish with Marnie, and then we'll move on to the next subject for tonight. Hello, Marnie.
Hi. Hi, everyone. It's really good to be here with you tonight. I really, in a sense, enjoyed this week's homework. I have a lot of work to do around vanity, I discovered. And it came up for me in so many different ways as I was just watching for it. And I just, maybe this is a commercial for anchoring outside yourself more than anything else. This week, several things came up for me where vanity was the driver. And in several cases, I was mortified and very embarrassed that this thing existed in me. And I just wanted to mention that I shared things with my journey group. I've shared things with my work partner. I've shared things with my family. And there is something so cathartic in just putting it out there and anchoring an experience outside yourself. I felt like when I would just own up to a case of vanity and explain to my journey group or work partner an experience I'd had that was grounded in nothing but vanity, it's like something was released And a little bit of space opened up inside me where something real could grow. And there was just such liberation in that. And of course, I didn't want to own up to some of these things. Or, I mean, there is certainly a ton of humor in this stuff. And I laughed a lot this week because it's just so ludicrous, the things that we do. And but I just wanted to mention how valuable I found the experience of just, okay, verbalizing it to someone else and getting it outside of me for just a greater sense of openness for something real to grow inside me. So thank you so much. This was a wonderful week. And like David said, I need to keep working with vanity too. So,
yeah, thank you, Marnie. Yeah, for those that that could hear that in a special way, I sure appreciate what you said, because there is a realness of anchoring it outside of ourselves and getting another observation of it by listening to ourselves tell the account of the experience of it. And the beauty is how life seems to welcome that in such a precious way. And it gives us more of the experience of, this is not I. This is just an experience that was going through me. We're actors on the stage of life. So that's so cool. As you were speaking, it was reminding me of a moment where I went out on the edge, and I remember where I was in the kitchen of the house that we lived in. And I had just said something to Alicia and Gregory, my son, and Alex, my daughter. And then I stopped and said, that was a lie. I thought to myself, okay, you're going to retain that lie and you're going to keep it going, or you're going to anchor it outside of yourself. And just in a split second, this is all rushing through my head. What? Tell somebody that you lied? Well, are you going to be a fool for the work? Are you going to continue to prolong this illusion of that? And so in a split second, I said, do it. And I said, then that was just a lie. What I just said was just a lie. Never mind it. And there was silence in the room for about 5 seconds. And then everybody laughed. And then we went on to the next part of the conversation. And I thought, oh my gosh, it is safe out there. It is safe to be true to who we are and to see these things and let them move right through us. And I did. I felt like at that moment, I felt that energy going through me like water moving through a screen and just keeps right on going. There's a little bit of movement as it goes through, but it just kept right on going. So I appreciate that what you just said reminded me of that really good experience and how blessed we are to serve in a very priestly, and that way I don't mean any male or female way about it, but coming from the Catholic tradition, you know, I was used to going into this little cubicle and sitting and waiting my turn. And when my turn came, you know, the window went up and there sat a priest, and I would tell him, bless me, Father, for I have sinned and these are my sins. And then he would give me my penance, and I go away, and I go out, and I'd be feeling like I did in the kitchen. Oh my goodness, I'm absolved. And what we do here is we have a priestly function with each other when we listen to these things and we recognize this is not I. And we can self-remember for a person in a moment where they may not be able to, and we can hold that space for them. It's it is such a precious thing that we do in community with that. So Marnie, thank you. So as we continue with this idea, and we move into a little bit more focus on pride and vanity, not pride and vanity, but anger and resentment. I want to start it with telling you where, you know, how it is, how it works for me, how I take the work, because anger and resentment are really quite different in their energies. They are vibrating in a much denser, heavier, and violent nature than pride and vanity, and certainly lust and greed. And this is this can be very difficult for us to anchor outside of ourselves, but it is so important to do so. And I have one particular experience that reminds me and continues it. I keep it alive purposely in my time body because it is so useful. The mea culpa of it, the ongoing experience of anger acted out in the world, This particular example, I continue anchor off mind to myself because it's good for me to do so. And you know, anger is something that is deep seated in my development. It was the way that I was parented by my dad. And you know, when friends at the work, you know, and friends at the church for a couple of decades have looked at me and said, "Why is that guy always walking around with such a tight butt?" Well, it's self-protection, because I learned at a young age that my body was like a punching bag for life every day. And a good example of that is when during the time of year when there are a lot of other guys at our home for hunting and chores and other farm-related things, as I would walk through the kitchen as an infant, my dad would just, he'd boot me in the butt. And sometimes I'd fall, you know, and sometimes I'd just lift off the ground, and it was never a good experience. And he would laugh, and he's an alpha, and everybody would have to laugh with him. And it really, I resented that, and it hurt. The anger built up in that. And it's one of the things that as I grew, I had this anger spot towards men. And so I worked hard. My personality worked hard, the self-protection instincts, to become strong, to be able to defend myself and defend others, to work on my intellect, to be able to hold myself. All of this was in preparation to deal with men in life. And so as time goes on, what do I find myself doing? But before I met the work, one of the last extraordinary outbreaks of anger I had is when I picked my son up and I jacked him up against the wall for ruining something of mine in the garage. And this young boy, he is probably five, maybe 6 years old. And I was my dad in that moment. Now, a man of love, a man that resides in love, would never do something like that. But this is where the work doesn't accuse us of sin. It says that we're asleep. It's sleep. A person awake would never do that. And so I carry that with me in my time body as a reminder of what happens in life, how life is in this particular contribution in it when asleep. And outside of the influences of the work. And yes, we're innocent of it because this is the way that we're encultured. But this is also the place in the work that we do where the sins of the father, so to speak, do not need to be passed on to the son. And Tim said this to me in a conversation one time when we were going through time body exercises of some of the things that I had experienced, and he was kind of ping-ponging back with things that he experienced. He said, but you know what, one of the things that you can take to the bank is that your dad got a better deal than his dad. You got a better deal than your dad, and your son's got a better deal than you. And I looked through that and I said, is that the experience for you too? And he said, it is my experience. I'm like, wow, you know, this is all good. So just as a reminder, when we are talking about these very afflictive emotions, let's always remember that we're encultured this way. These are eyes. This is not who we are. This is not our essence. It's not our true being. And so these afflictive eyes have energies that we want from them. We want these energies for our spiritual transformation. So we do our steps of self-observation, non-identification in a very complete way, and then beginning to practice self-remembering with the available energies that come from these. And that's our aim in the work. So let us feel safe with each other. Let us also be very, let's be very clear when we're anchoring these outside of ourselves that we're doing it in an environment that is suitable for our spiritual transformation. I hope you get that. So let's move from this point here. I'd like to begin to share some points from this week from our email and also from the references. Okay. So some notes on resentment. I'm going to break it up here into two. We're going to first talk a little bit about resentment, and then we're going to go into anger. Some negative emotions have the power to go on and on by themselves. Resentment can be like this, a dangerous illness eating up everything good and healthy in you if unchecked. And as you could heard in my statements a few moments ago, this experience of resentment that I had that developed at a very young age continued with me for years and years and years, probably into 40 years. And it ate up much good. I just can't even envision what my life would be like if I was still back in upstate New York and was tracking to be the type of man that I was there outside of the influences of the Church of Conscious Harmony and the work. What it would be like as a spouse to be with this type of guy. What it would be like to be to have this type of guy as a father as you continue to grow. As a sibling, as a neighbor, the hard-heartedness that was coming from my upbringing, it just eats up everything good and healthy in you. Another thing that's worthy of ponderings is that in all states of resentment, a form of conceit is involved. There is a self-love involved. There's self-protection that goes with that. But it's worthy. Many of us, one of the things I love about this church community is that if we look at the map of the scale of consciousness, it is a community in general, and just so many are vibrating at the level of acceptance and higher. And so we can take these energies and utilize these emotions, that is, and take the energies and continue to use these for our spiritual transformation. And we can look and see where subtle forms continue to exist with us and realize that, hey, there's hay to be made there. The next point, making daily inner accounts of others piles up fuel for resentment. And no one can reach a higher level of themselves by such behavior. Daily inner accounts of others. Sometimes being plugged in too much to news, to media, can help us develop a very convenient form of observing resentment that we have towards particular figures in the media and how that can pile up. And if we have our eyes open to that, we'll experience what the ramifications are in ourselves and our inability to reach higher levels of consciousness because of the weight of feeding these resentments. Finally, the last one is politely concealing resentment does not change the underlying self-love. So just because I don't express it and I'm still experiencing it, it doesn't mean that I'm not under the influence of that vibration, of that energy. And 2 weeks ago, when we were talking about lust, Peter reminded us about what Jesus had said about the vision that you may have about your neighbor. To not physically lust towards your neighbor, but yet have those lusting thoughts for your neighbor, is still sleep. It is an underlying form of identification that's very unhealthy for us. And that's what this is referring to right here. It's an underlying form of self-love. By not expressing it, that's good. But if we're still experiencing it, not working against it, we've got better. So transforming resentment. Mechanically, we are one-sided. And so do not see the other person in ourselves and the other and ourselves in the other person. What does that remind you of? So if you had to give a work name to that, what would that be called? Yes, that's right. It's external considering, what we're seeing in the next bullet point. Use external considering, try to see yourself as they see you. So in that way, we're observing what we sense that they're experiencing, the person in ourselves and ourselves in the other person. Another way of neutralizing and transforming resentment is to recognize some of its subtle forms. And chronic resentment may lurk below the surface and be expressed as sulking, sour grapes, having a chip on one's shoulder. That was the little Donald I was talking about. Or a hair trigger for firing off. Look for these with self-observation. We may not see that, oh, this is based on resentment. This is just a domino that's being touched by resentment and knocking that one down. A reminder too that on the archive page of the Journey School, with each class, not only do we have the recording of the class, but the email for the week, but we also have class notes. So we can always go back and get these notes at any time. And the final one for transforming resentment is very useful to keep in mind that millions of people at this moment are feeling resentment. And then using the work idea, I can work. Now, if we can observe our resentment at an early enough stage before it gets too deep-seated in that particular moment, and remembering that humanity is experiencing this in a profound way across the planet, I can be a light worker. I can remember myself in this moment. Okay. Now, before we go with anger, I want to stop for just a moment and see if there's any thoughts or expressions of resentment that we'd like to bring forward before we move to the next phase of anger. Okay, with that said, oh, Karen Rink. Thank you, Karen.
All right, can I be heard?
You sure can, Karen, thank you.
Yay, thank you, Donald. Well, I've been mulling over, you know, my eyes that were getting extremely resentful and about a political situation. And I know, you know, it hit the same spot every single time I thought of it, every single time. It wasn't different, it was the same. And it was unpleasant. So I was you know, thinking about the ways I could, how could I see this different? How could this be different? Asking for a different, asking God for a different perspective. And how can I see this differently? And I felt pretty darn hopeless about that. Anyway, but I, you know, I was just noticing this, and I know in the past when I have worked on certain resentments that they did go away. They were not as strong as they once were, and some of them just disappeared. I mean, they were useless. So why go there? And so I like you bringing up this, the resentment and anger, and I get to, you know, I'm going to look at this again because it's a continual irritant for me.
Yeah.
And I would love to see it differently, see it with hope and love and maybe even gratitude, believe it or not. But yeah. I know it's there. Yeah. I know it's there. I don't have it yet. I mean, it's available to me, and I will be praying and waiting for that.
You are so on your way, you know, because you've got the observation of it. It's clear that you can feel what its feeling is, and although you didn't say it, but I could sense it in your body that you're very clear on the physical expression of that resentment. So you've already observed it and you're working on anchoring it outside of yourself and non-identifying with it even further. And you already have your wish for how to practice self-remembering with the available energy. Girl, you are so on your way with it. So, and we're going to keep going with anger because a lot of the transformative ways of working with anger, we're going to do the same thing with resentment. They work both ways because they're so closely related. So thank you for bringing that. Yes. Marcia and Deborah, I'm going to continue on to anger. And if you can hold your hands, I'd really like to hear what you say. And we'll tie it all together right after we do this quick little snippet on anger. So the next thing that I want to talk through is some brief bullet points on anger. We become angry when our vanity is hurt. So look for it. It's like when I go and I blow, why do I blow? Well, a very big reason is frequently our vanity's been hurt. Next, the anger stems from frustrated want based on the energy field below it, which is desire, and exaggerating the importance of desire and how it can lead to rage. Now, these are notes from Dr. David Hawkins' book. And for those who haven't read Dr. David Hawkins' work, oh my goodness, please start with Power versus Force and take that in. So much of what it is that we will be revealing and have been working with these is coming from Dr. Hawkins' work on the mapping the scale of consciousness. So that is such a great read for us. Anger easily leads to hatred, which has an erosive effect on all areas of a person's life. Anger is often expressed by resentment or as a lifestyle. This is exemplified by having the nature of being irritable, quarrelsome, contentious. So if we recognize that there's some irritability going here, it's like, well, okay, that's good to know. I'm getting quarrelsome. Well, I'm also being a little bit contentious. I'm on the edge about things. It was like, well, you know what's coming. You've got the early warning signs. The anger is soon to follow if it's not neutralized very soon. Some of these energy patterns. And the anger is used as a substitute for courage. So how do we transform anger? Nothing is harder to bear than the negative manifestation of others towards you. Hold this idea close to work eyes. This comes from John Fuchs' book, 40 Years After Gurdjieff. And Nichols says this, something very similar to this in commentary as well. Nothing is harder to bear than the negative manifestation of others towards you. If we can just hold this, how difficult it is when someone fires off at us or something doesn't go our way because of somebody else's behavior that has aroused afflictive emotions in us and what's leading us towards anger. We can have a future prayer towards this. Work on anger through the body. The easiest way is to activate movement. Okay, so we're talking about here, shifting centers. Last week, we had a really good conversation with Esther and Esther was talking about being in those places where, you know, I observe it. I don't need to do it. I can go right to self-remembering. By golly, you can. And if you can, we should. I don't want to spend any time lingering in self-observation and non-identification over something that I've already worked with. If I've got the experience of it and I've got the name of it and I can see that it's coming or that it's on, and I have got the workforce behind me because of prior work, then I can move right past non-identification and go right into self-remembering. My goodness, why spend time in hell, which is identification for me? Why spend time in purgatory, which is non-identification? I'm not in heaven, but I am not in hell. Why not just go right to heaven if you can? But we got to make sure that we've done the work at first and that we are having a legitimate practice of self-remembering rather than kind of fooling ourselves here. So one of the ways when we are just in that energy of anger and it is just on us. And there is no separating from it. In fact, it is sometimes my anger has been so difficult, I can't even observe it. However, I can observe it in retrospect. But if I've got just a little bit of separation, a work idea is there for me, and I can work through it by changing centers. Work on anger through the body. The easiest way is to activate movement. Increase your circulation and oxygen intake through deep breathing. Observe the exhalation of the breath and see that your lungs are completely empty. Working physically, the energy anger has created can be transformed into a positive force that consumes and absorbs the anger like a chemical in water. And this changing of centers, it can happen through exercise. There's a lot of cleaning. There's so many different ways that it can happen. Work on the small eyes. Left unobserved, the energy accumulates and often leads to angry expressions. So often in the work, in our sharing with each other, we share the big moments. And please be encouraged to share the little self-observations and the little efforts towards non-identification and practicing a self-remembering. Because it is these little eyes, it's like something has been put out of place in your life. And your life, and these things happen at home quite frequently if you live with somebody else. Or if not, then probably life will give you enough of this at your job or someplace. And something is out of place. And it just is like, it starts getting a little bit irritating. It's like, oh, okay. That's, if we don't work with it right there, it is going to hold that anger. And then before we know it, something else is going to, another impression later on, but it's still connected enough with the energy. It's going to come in and it's going to add to it. And there's a cumulative effect of these little eyes. And then the next thing we know it, we blow. Work on the small eyes. It doesn't have to go all the way to the big one. When possible, practice the use of reason and restraint. Remember, anger is used as a substitute for courage, reason, and restraint. And it does take courage to work through anger and transform it. And transformation is possible through prayer and self-remembering. Now, let's also recognize with anger and resentment that both of those can live in the emotional part of the emotional center and in deeper ways can reside in the intellectual part of the emotional center, but on the denying side, both on the denying side. How can I tell which is which? That sounds like a lot of words. Well, there's one key that can tell us whether we're in the moving part of the center or in the intellectual part of the center. What is that key? Those of you that said attention, you got it. When we're in the moving part of the center, it doesn't matter what center it is, the characteristic of attention in that particular center is that we are under the influences of that as long as we keep out distractions. However, when we are fully consumed by it, we are in the intellectual part, although the negating side, the denying side of the emotional center, and there we have directed attention into it. I mean, we just can't get out of it. And that's the anger that I was talking about that sometimes I can't even observe. I have to wait until the energy dissipates enough that I can then begin to observe around it. And I think Gay said something earlier about there being a residual energy. Yes, that residual energy is so useful. Because remember, we may not be able to work in that moment, but we can work retrospect. And that retrospect working, it counts. And how does it count? By using it and sending a future memory, the next one. Recognizing that, okay, I've been there now, I've been there before. How do I make sure that the next time this happens, that I have got the inoculation for it? The way is, first of all, working on the small things, but then also sending a future memory forward of that feeling of when the energy of anger and deep-seated resentment come on to you, that you have a work idea there that can meet you and remind you that there is energy available in this work idea to begin to diffuse, to transform that energy right then and there. This future memory thing, friends, it is so big. It's so big. So please, let's always use that. And the other thing is taking the opposite position intentionally. And that was what Karen was talking about in a way, that, you know, if we would just take the media or the political figure or whoever it is that we build a resentment for and pray for them or have a little fun with it and take that side purposely, intentionally, and not just as a poser, but really take that side, you'd be really amazed at all of a sudden how long it would take for all of a sudden you'd begin to vibrate on that field, that side of the pendulum swing. It's like, oh my gosh, it is really true that we can take the other side to neutralize. And this is what the dualities of anger, the usefulness of what's been in the emails is, that we can take the other side, that we can hold on or we can let go. We can punish and get even, or we can set somebody scot-free. We can emotionalize, or we can think. We can get all excited and stirred up, or we can stay cool. These are all ways of transforming that energy. Okay, I'm gonna stop sharing there. And Marcia, I think it was Deborah Jean, yes. Deborah Jean, can you close us out quickly?
Yes. So here's the question. We talked about pride having kind of a positive place, but that vanity doesn't. Is that the same with resentment, which seems to me like we just tell that story over and over again and kind of wind ourselves up? Yeah. But does, is anger kind of the front end of what courage is?
So let me start with the first part of your question. For my place in the work, I think that there is good in every eye. So whether it's vanity, whether it's resentment, anger, pride, there's good in every eye. I really believe this in my experience. If I find the good in it, I found the God in it. So I take that little bit of good and I hold on to it and I use it for my spiritual work, and the rest of it I release. I want non-identification and I want that energy used in transformative ways with my psychology. So I try to find the good in it and then let the rest go. And I hope that kind of sums it up and encapsulates it for you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Marcia, I would love, and Leanne, I'd love to hear what you say, but I'm sorry, I've got to respect the time of the class. But thank you for your willingness to share. I'm not going to go into the exercise of the week because we've got that in the email. And so, Marianne, if you'd like to close us with your words of wisdom and prayer. Thank you. Thank you
so much, Donald. And Marcia and Leanne, I encourage you to start off by sharing next week. And we look forward to hearing, because since we're continuing this topic on, there'll be opportunity in the sharing time next week. Thank you, dear friends. And we prepare to close with a word from Rodney Collin. To ourselves, we feel very important. We think, I want. If we felt our real positions, then things would come to us. We should not let them be and not try to hold on to. We should just let them be and not try to hold on to them. If we forget ourselves, things will come to us. Self-importance is always binding us in everything. We think that to forget ourselves means giving up something pleasant. We do not realize that to do so means entering into a whole new realm of happiness. So let us enter that realm as we prepare to close our time and close our night and affirm and pray together aloud that God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and to sleep, rest in Christ's peace. Amen.